This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
All right, so the time has gone 12 minutes past the hour of 11 o'clock. We're in the last hour of Power Talk for this Tuesday morning, the second day of July. I quite like July, Owen. Owen is now running the desk. Good morning. Because you know, isn't it hamba ngohlelo? The first was a Monday. The second is a Tuesday. It's very orderly. It's a very orderly way of organizing the month. Yeah, here, here to July. We like it when things just work properly, systematically. And a thing, it seems as though things work properly in Iran, right? Unfortunately, the Iranian president died tragically about a month ago. Helicopter found in the mountains in the north of the country alongside, he was traveling alongside his foreign minister, some advisors and security detail. Well, now elections have held an election. To elect his replacement. And as experts like Thembisa Fakude have explained to us in the past, obviously the Ayatollah Khomeini is the great spiritual leader, is the overarching head of state for Iran. The president is not quite that person, but the late president had some kind of, I don't know what the word would be. Maybe I should just go to Thembisa straight. He had a very high spiritual standing within religious structures. He was also a lawyer as well as a cleric. So the question is, when Iranians go to the polls to elect the replacement president, what is the criteria that they use? Would it have to be somebody with a high religious standing as well as a very definitive aptitude for government and leadership in the way in which the former president was a former constitutional court judge, if not the chief justice? I stand to be corrected. So that kind of political seniority, but also that kind of religious significance and importance. Well, polls closed at about 12 a.m. On Friday to allow people to vote in this election. And what we're told is it was a very high turnout for the snap election. And many issues obviously came to the fore. And one of them, we're told, are the current tensions between Israel and the allies of Iran in the Middle East, namely Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon, and just general regional policies within the Gulf states. I don't know how the elections are decided. We're told that there's a council made up of six scholars and six jurists who vet the candidates who can then put up their names for elections, which took place on Friday. Thembisa Fakude, I think I'm just going to hand it over to you. You've heard all the things that I said in my preamble. Over to you. There's an election, snap election, after the tragic death of the former president, Ibrahim Raisi. A council decides who can run for elections, and then people went to the polls on Friday.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. The first thing to remember, the new names. So there is a new candidate likely to make it this time around. His name is Masoud Pezeshkian. It's the new name that we need to start remembering moving forward, because it's likely that on Friday he is going to be the new president of Iran. So the process now, of course, is going to be a second round of elections. Now that the candidates were vetted and others were excluded, including President Ahmadinejad, the former president of Iran, he didn't qualify. So the two that have made it so far is Saeed Jalili and Masoud Pezeshkian. And one of them will have to be the president or at least by Friday. But again, as I've said before, Presidency in Iran means nothing, because Ayatollah Khamenei remains the ultimate decision maker. He's the main man in the country. All decisions will have to go through him.
Okay. So before we talk about the role of the spiritual leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, let's talk about the candidates who've emerged for the second round of elections. As you're saying, the name we must learn how to speak now is Masoud Kiani. But we know that, as you say, Saeed Jalili is also a contender. And we know him as the former nuclear negotiator. So quite a prominent man in international affairs. But who are they in Iranian politics?
Well, both of them are close and approved. The fact that they participated in these presidential elections, they were approved by Ayatollah Khamenei. So they are very important, but we need to understand that they hold different politics. For example, Masoud Pezeshkian, he is known to have criticized how the protests were handled. In other words, following the death of Mahsa Amini, that young girl whose head was banged against a police van, eventually died. So Mahmoud Pezeshkian was much more critical in terms of how that was handled, and he was seen to be on the side of the protesters. So he's likely to be accepted, whereas Saeed Jalili is seen to be in a different political position or preference. He is a much more conservative person. He, yes, indeed, was part and parcel of the negotiating team when Iran was negotiating with the G with plus five plus one, in other words, the permanent five members plus Germany on the nuclear deal. The fact that he was in that team, it means that he was carefully selected, because that's one most important foreign policy position of Iran, or process that Iran has engaged with the outside world. And not anyone can qualify to be that. You have to be at least sanctioned and agreed upon by the close ally of Ayatollah Khamenei and Ayatollah himself. Okay. So he's quite trusted, but the numbers that he has garnered over the past, at least the first round of elections, indicate that the Iranians do not prefer him. Rather, they prefer Masoud Pezeshkian to be the next president.
Okay, so from what you're saying, Saeed Jalili, the former nuclear negotiator who's known in international circles, is not just conservative, but represents the establishment, represents the entrenched political system. Whereas Masoud Pezeshkian, somehow, because of his outspokenness around recent human rights violations against women, represents a new era. And so you've really got the old versus the new as the choices that voters should make in the second round of elections.
Yes, it seems so. But we must also mention that the Iranians don't have a choice, actually, because these candidates are not chosen by the Iranian people. These candidates are chosen by the Guardian Council, and the Guardian Council decides who gets to be a candidate or presidential candidate. So, again, whether these were democratically preferred candidates, it's a discussion for another day. I'll argue they are not.
Okay.
But Masoud Pezeshkian is likely to be at least the one preferred, you know, the better of all the evils that the Iranian people had a choice to choose. So he's likely by looking at the numbers, he's likely to win the elections again because of his stance on protest, because of his stance. He's known as a reformist.
Right.
What that means, we don't know. But in Iran, if you're a reformist, means that you sometimes disagree with the prevailing political thought or positions that many politicians embrace, particularly when it comes to support.
And from what you've just said, even if Masoud Pezeshkian has more appeal with the voters because of his contrarian positions, he's still also very much part of the establishment, because he would have been selected by the Guardian Council. So he's still very much a person who's in the system and is palatable to the ruling class.
Totally, totally. He's part and parcel of the political elite of Iran that is endorsed to lead Iran by Ayatollah Ali Khamenei.
Okay. In terms of voter turnout, we're told that voter turnout in general has declined significantly. There's also a demographic shift, which is many voters are now young people, and young people who really and truly have been very critical of the government's stance, particularly against women in recent past. The issue of women having to now wear a hijab, those protests where women were burning the hijab in public that led to many women being imprisoned, detained. And then, of course, as you're saying, some of the terrible, terrible human rights issues that have emerged in the country. So would young people go out and vote, even if it's for a candidate that they believe, what would be the word, is sympathetic to their cause? Or would they say voting is part of justifying the system?
I think many of them did not vote, at least in the first round. I mean, 40% turnout. That's not too good. So, because they know that very little will change in Iran. The young people in Iran want an overhaul of the political system. And this does not promise to do that. In fact, it's going to maintain the status quo. And understanding what we've said about Masoud Pezeshkian, he's still likely to continue seeking acknowledgement by Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, and I don't think he's going to go against that. The other important point is that Ayatollah Ali Khamenei is at a very, very advanced age, and it was believed that Ibrahim Raisi, the president of Iran, passed away not long ago, hence the snap election, was going to replace him. Now the two candidates have those ambitions. The only obstacle, of course, is that one of the criterion that has been used by the religious leadership in Iran is that if to be an Ayatollah, you must be of the bloodline of the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, peace be upon him. And both of these gentlemen don't have that. So it's going to be interesting. If the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei dies during the tenure of either of the two, it's going to be a very, very interesting or difficult process for Iran in terms of choosing who's going to replace Ayatollah Ali Khamenei.
Okay, so there's quite a few things going on, right? There's the issue for political reform, which is what young people are calling on. And even though there is a candidate who sympathizes with the cause of women and younger people, he's still very much an establishment player. So that's one disadvantage. The Guardian Council selects who can contest the election. So in itself, there's some kind of the political ruling class still deciding, as it were, who the leaders of the country will be. But what's happened in the past, certainly before the tragic accident, was that the president, Ibrahim Raisi, was not just a cleric and a jurist and I think the former chief justice, but he also had this bloodline link to the great prophet Muhammad, God bless his soul. And so he was seen as a natural leader in the event the 85-year-old Ayatollah passed on. It would be a natural succession. But what's happening now is there isn't this natural succession because neither of the presidential candidates have that blood link. Even if they have the strong credentials, they don't have that blood link. And if an 85-year-old Ayatollah were to pass, it's going to create a leadership vacuum in Iran in the future. So there's the issue now, and there's the inevitable in future, which must also come into play. Is this what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. And I think that's why many young people believe that this is a permanent political status quo. They will never have a chance to occupy a place of power, nor will they ever have a chance to control the decision-making process in Iran. So that's why they're calling for an overhaul of the political system in that country. But that's likely, that's unlikely to happen because the religious leadership around the Ayatollah is quite adamant in its position. And, you know, Shia Islam in Iran is seen as not only a reference point for other Shias around the world, but something that has to be preserved, like, you know, tribal formations in South Africa, or the royal family in the UK.
Right.
So the religious guardianship is regarded as such, and many people do believe that it has to be maintained, and those that talk about it often disappear, and as a result, very few people really criticize the current formation.
We've only got 4 minutes left before the end of our conversation. I wonder if you could use 2 minutes before we say goodbye to you to explain to us why the religious issue is important in Iran, because Iran has some of the best scientists, mathematicians, religious legal scholars. It's a very powerful and influential country in the so-called Middle East, and it's often a tension between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and we're told over which form of Islam is practiced. Should it be the Sunni Islam, the Shia Islam? And there's that kind of cultural religious supremacy issue also at play. Could you help us understand what that is all about? Because we don't understand why, in a country that's also regarded as somewhat progressive, Iran, there's also this kind of religious conservatism and this particular form of religion.
Well, in 2 minutes, I can't, but I can give you just a point. One is you've got Saudi Arabia, which is seen as the custodian of Sunni Islam, and it has to be counted in terms of preserving other smaller Shia communities around the Middle East and the world. And Iran sees itself as that. So if Iran or those who want to encourage the Shia leadership in Iran argue is that should, if the Shia Islam is destroyed in Iran, or the political processes and how the Shia Islam is propagated throughout the world is removed from Iran, you are likely to have Iran or Shia Islam losing ground around the world, and therefore giving Saudi Arabia power to convert other Shia minorities around the world, which is something that the Shia Muslims do not want. And this, by the way, dates back to the time immediately after the death of the Prophet, when there was a big dispute between two factions, one Shia and one, which later on became Shia and Sunni. And that's a tradition that has been held in the Middle East. And it's unlikely to change because it's part and parcel of the political architecture in that part of the world.
Okay, so... Okay, I think you have helped, but one day we're gonna delve into it much more in terms of understanding political Islam, religious Islam, and how all of this comes into play. But as we close the conversation off, so second round of elections, there's probably going to be a winner if you look at the numbers from the last first round election. As you said, we must learn the name Masoud Pezeshkian, who might emerge the winner. And then what? And then what happens after that?
Well, after that, it's going to be business as usual, but I think the Gaza and Hezbollah standoff is going to dominate his first few days in office. The resuscitation of the discussions, provided Trump doesn't win in November, resuscitation of discussions and negotiations on a nuclear deal will likely to also be on his agenda. Touring the country and trying to appease certain civil society movements and organizations to stop the protests that have been ongoing is going to be part of his agenda. And also making sure that countries such as Iraq, which, by the way, is the capital of Shia Islam, and it's been seen to be moving away from Iran because of other problems in the region, he's likely to pay a visit to Iraq to try and convince the Iraqis that Iran is still their friend. So those are, I think, for me, the four major first few things that he's going to be doing. But we must not forget that the war in Gaza, as long as it continues, is certainly going to be supporting all the factions that are currently fighting the Israeli forces, both in the West Bank and in Gaza.
As always, Thembisa Fakude, it's an education when you come on the show, and we really appreciate you. He's a senior fellow at the Africa-Asia Dialogues.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.